Good morning and welcome to the IVF Daddies podcast. Today, I'm here with a great friend of mine, Monica Bula, who runs L Conception's surrogacy agency. I'm super excited because this is your first podcast ever.
I'm like, yay. I'm so excited.
So you have run L now for 2 years. You started it 2 years ago, which is amazing. But you've been in this industry for over 20 years.
Yeah, 21 years.
It's amazing. So tell us a little bit about how you started and what got you into this.
Yeah, so little quick story. So I actually started out as a surrogate, didn't get pregnant, 6 failed transfers.
Oh, crikey.
Two couples. 2003 is when I started to be a surrogate. No PGD testing. My first transfer, 5 embryos got put in. Yeah, crazy. But so I didn't get pregnant, never even had a positive HCG with any of those 6 transfers. But it led me to get hired at the first agency and literally did every job from started as a receptionist, went through egg donor coordination, intake, surrogate intake, led me to management, all the way to director, and then here we are.
And here you are.
Yeah, so when I say I've done it all, I've done it all.
Which is great because you've seen every single facet of the business.
Yeah, surrogates go through, yes, I haven't made it through pregnancy, but I've seen all of it. And I also have a nursing background with OBGYN nursing, so I do understand the dynamics of that. But I do understand all of the aspects of the agency, and I think that's truly helped me and run a successful agency for sure.
So it's amazing because you literally have done all these different aspects within the surrogacy agency world. Mm-hmm. However, you've mentioned something that struck a chord to me a little bit just there. So before we jump into other stuff, when you're dealing with intended parents who can't get pregnant, you obviously tried this, right? Mm-hmm. You tried to be a surrogate. You did the whole thing. You selfishly thought, I'm going to help somebody. And then it didn't work. Mm. How did that make you feel at the time? And how do you feel that's enabled you in your business?
Yeah, so interesting. So at the time, so I was 24 years old. So at the time, it was devastating. I felt a failure. I was letting these intended parents down. My first match, I wasn't close to them. It was a different kind of industry at the time. There was more closed matches. So it wasn't... We weren't very bonded. I definitely felt like I was letting them down. It was a lot of work. It's a lot of injections. It's a lot of time. 3 transfers back to back. It wasn't easy. And then I went right into a match, and that particular match was a closed match. So no contact with the intended parents. Didn't know who they were. So different dynamic again, which isn't quite as common nowadays, but back then it was more common. So again, it was a little distance, but 100% I was disappointed in myself. So from an intended mother's perspective, it's a letdown. As a woman, you feel your body's not responding and doing what we're told. We're told that we're able to produce, and this is what we are grown up, and we're supposed to have children, and when are you having a children? We're supposed to get married and have children, and then when you can't do it, it's a disappointment. So I tell the surrogates this all the time to lead into something else as support is to the surrogates. When we have failed transfers, which happens very common, we get these butterflies and roses that you get pregnant the first transfer, and surrogates get disappointed too that it's not their fault. Failed transfers happen, and it's just as hard as on the intended parent, and it's a grieving process, right? So these intended moms go through that grieving process as well, but the surrogates do too. It's different. It's not as severe as the intended moms, but it's still a letdown. They feel like they're disappointing the intended mom. They're not holding up their part of the deal or their side of the agreement.
Yeah.
And plus it's physically draining, right? And so it's hard. It's emotional, for sure.
And I guess to your point of butterflies and roses, where you think you're sold a dream and it's going to happen and it's all amazing.
And I wish it did every time.
Yeah. And surrogates are part and parcel of that too, because to be a surrogate, you have to have had your own child, right?
Correct. Uncomplicated pregnancy.
And so you've done that. You think it's all fine. And then all of a sudden it doesn't happen.
That's a great point. So yes, typically we've all gotten pregnant on our own, usually by accident, right? Like, oops, I'm pregnant. You don't think about that. You just have your children. They're healthy. You don't think twice about all this, right? You don't even entertain the idea of infertility as a surrogate, right? You don't think about complications, genetic abnormalities, that it takes you years to get pregnant. your 25-year-old woman who just has two kids. And then to go into a failed transfer, you don't even entertain that. So it gives you a different perspective if you're matched with an intended mom, right? That why they may be distant to their surrogate in the beginning, or if they've had multiple miscarriages, why they may be distant from their surrogate until they get past those milestones.
And do you see that there is 100%. A distance?
100%. Till they get past those milestones. So as an example, if a mom's had miscarriages, three miscarriages up to 20 weeks, she may be a little distant from her surrogate because that trauma's there till that surrogate gets past that milestone. Where the surrogate will say, why? Because she just got pregnant with her kids, no problem. Right. They don't think about it. It's different, right?
Elaborate on how you interface between the two parties.
So I'm really good at reading personalities and knowing what the surrogates need, what the intended moms need, especially with moms. Dads are different. In all honesty, dads don't know what to do. And they just say, what does the surrogate need? Because they don't know what it's like to be pregnant. And so that's a little easier. It depends on the intended mom's history and, in all honesty, what her trauma is, what led her to needing a surrogate. And so that dictates how I help the surrogate get there and what to navigate that relationship and what they both want out of that relationship. Because every match is different, right? And what we say, like in a match call, right? When we're matching in the beginning, everybody says what they want. Great. That's what we say. But are we going to get there in the end? So what I really work on in the beginning is telling a surrogate it can be 1, 2, and 3, but 500 different versions of that, to really open up their mind so we're not narrowed down to what they see on social media or what they see on forums or what they see like on an afternoon special, a school special, of what surrogacy looks like. Because that's when we're comparing what we're looking like, what everyone else is posting on forums, when we run into issues, right? And where it starts not being what they want it to be. Because I can't predict what a relationship's going to look like from two profiles. I need to let it form and those relationships, friendships form. We just don't know. I can predict and match as best as I can in the beginning, but I have to let that form just like any friendship.
So you spend a lot of time with the surrogate understanding who she is. We did a podcast recently with a friend of Julio's in Spain, and he was very on point when he said, we always talk about the surrogate mother, but actually I actually agree with him, that it should be more about the surrogate family, because it's not only the surrogate, right? It's her family too, because they don't have to be married, but they have to have a stable family life. And
right.
So do you get involved in that, and how does that all work?
I talk to the surrogate significantly more, but 100%. We make sure that there are support systems in place. And if they're single, who's your backup to the backup? Is an auntie in town? Do you have a church community, a friend community? I find that single moms typically are more have backup systems because they already have it in their life. If they have a partner, a live-in partner or a husband, okay, are they on board? Are they going to help out more when you have appointments, things like that? Yeah, so the dynamic has to be there. The support system has to be there. Do the husbands always fall in love with the intended parents? Yes, no. Again, I don't know if that dynamic's always going to be there, but it 100% happens. I find it to be a little bit more common with same-sex couples where that happens a little bit more. Those friendships kind of form. And funny enough, sometimes when the husbands are a little bit more closed-minded sometimes, I think they go, oh, this is cool. And they end up to be a little bit more open-minded in the long run.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I think open mind, this, it is cheesy and I say it all the time, but open mind, open heart is the only way to make it through a surrogacy for intended parents and the surrogate.
When you're looking to find a surrogate, how do you do that?
So I'm very fortunate. I get a lot of referrals. So my girls refer girls, and I have a lot of repeat surrogates. And because I've been doing this a long time, I'm very fortunate in that regard. And I take a lot of pride in that. And so my girls come back. So that's very helpful, obviously. So when I'm looking for a surrogate, and this is my disclaimer, but to follow what you say, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a physician, but I look for red flags, right? So in the intake process, if they're not complying, if they're not returning phone calls, if things look shady, they're not going to get accepted into my program. Those are the things I look for. If they're simply not returning my call or not responding to a timely email, they're going to be a problem. right? They're not complying.
It's interesting.
It's simple.
One of the things that I was thinking about is what does, because from a medical perspective, we're always told about what denies a surrogate.
Right.
Like it's quite, it's
simple.
Very easy. But your red flags are, I've sent you an email, it takes you a week to reply.
I'm done.
Yeah.
It's going to be, have to be immediately. I'm going to be like, and then we're going to have a talk. And I mom the girls to death. And that's fine. That's my thing and my jam. But unless something's come up that's a legit and I don't get a vibe about it, and I tend to give girls a little bit of a chance, I get it. But if I'm not, then I'll let them move on.
So that's interesting. So you've developed almost like a gut feel.
Oh, 100%.
Wow. And what do you think the motivations for surrogates are?
That's 100% like paying it forward. They want to help people. You'll find that most surrogates are very personality similar. Lots of April birthdays, lots of Virgos, lots of December, like very similar in personality, very organized, lots of list makers, which are my girls, my people. But then they're also motivated to help their families, which is great, right? So we want it to be a full circle. We want them to better their lives also, and that's totally fine. I want them to be proud of themselves if they can pay off debt or buy a home or put college funds. I want them to be proud of what they've done besides help a family. I want them to look back at these 18 to maybe 24 months of their life and be like, oh my gosh, look what I did. And then in turn, look what I did for my family. That's what gives me my goosebumps. Oh, my girls did that. That's what gets me teary-eyed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 18 to 24 months.
That's the commitment.
How come?
From the time they go through screening, so it takes me about 1 to 3 months to get them into the program. To get fully accepted into the program.
What is it? Explain that a little bit.
So from the time they apply, like inquiry, hey, I want to be a surrogate. Great. So then we start the intake process right then. Like we're seeing how you reply. We're getting your medical records. Again, we're not doctors, but we're reviewing your medical records, looking for those easy things, complications in your pregnancy, too many C-sections, too many births, postpartum depression, things that will automatically exclude you from being a surrogate. And then the things that we briefly touched on that would just not complying, history in your, again, we want people to have restarts in life. We understand past and restarting, but if things are just too far off, psychological issues, things like that, then obviously we wouldn't let you move on. We do drug screen. We have them do an STD screen. We check their A1C. We do a background.
What's A1C?
I'm sorry, blood levels to make sure. Because the clinics that we work with check their A1C levels, which is like for pre-diabetes. So the clinics that we work with check that in medical screening. And if it comes back abnormal, it delays the medical screening. And then the girls have to go back to their primary, which delays legal. So if I do it as part of my intake, yes, it delays intake, but it saves time once they're matched with their intended parent. So it slows down my intake on the front end, but then it also doesn't delay once they're matched with their surrogate.
So you're making the process more efficient.
Right. So there's always delays. There's always unforeseen delays on the intended parent side once they're matched. But if I can try to alleviate some of those on the front side, then they go through a pretty detailed interview process with Kendra, my intake manager. She goes over compensation, commitment. So the girls have to be on injections for about 12 weeks, daily injections. So that's a huge commitment.
That I didn't realize.
Yeah. So they either have to be on a vaginal suppository, which is brutal, and or patches, which are like hormone patches, oral hormones, and or injections.
And this is all to get them to the point where...
It prepares their uterus for the embryos. And so you have to commit to that right off the bat. So we need to make sure the girls understand that as part of the intake process. So we have to manipulate their body to prepare for pregnancy because we're suppressing their ovulation. We're not, but the clinic is. But so we need to obviously make sure they understand that commitment because if they miss one dose, we're all off. So they have to understand that commitment.
And how long does that process take from intake through to matching and then through to the clinic?
So let's say a girl applies. On average, we say it takes about on a good day, maybe 2 months to get accepted into the program. Typically, I can match them fairly quickly because I always have intended parents waiting. And from the time they're matched to medical screening is about a month because it's based on their period cycle. From medical screening to legal is about 2 to 4 weeks, depending on how quickly we can get labs back and if everything looks normal, no repeat follow-ups or anything like that. Legal is anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. And then once we have legal, we can get on meds, which is about a month before you're ready for a transfer. And then hopefully we're pregnant the first transfer.
So that 12 weeks of injections is 4 weeks
prior to transfer. And then you're on injections until 12 weeks of pregnancy.
Wow.
And then once you're at 12 weeks of pregnancy, you're off medications and then...
And the process just continues.
Mm-hmm. And then what I tell the girls, it becomes traditionally like a pregnancy you were with your own children.
So one of the things that I, now that I look back on it, I'm slightly embarrassed about it, but when we had our surrogates...
You were naive. You didn't know better.
I always say it was my first pregnancy.
Well, you were in the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wasn't pregnant and I wasn't going through the whole entire process of pregnancy, which is tough. But how do you know if they're following instructions? How do you know if they're not drinking alcohol, smoking? Because that was something I was really concerned about.
And halfway across the world, right?
And far away.
So this is part of the intake process too. So we explain to them the legal part of it, right? So typically most of these girls have never been in an agreement, a legal agreement of this magnitude. So we explain that to them. It's a huge commitment of ethical, legal, and that's a little intimidating, which is okay. We want that to be. And then that's also part of the why we take so long to do the intake process, because I'm reading their personality. Are they going to comply? Are they going to follow the rules? I want them to be a rule follower. Are they going to listen to me? Are they going to follow these rules? And are they going to be slightly intimidated by the legal agreement? Are they going to understand if they don't take those injections, they're going to be in breach of contract? That's scary words, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to understand that this is huge and that ultimately they could lose a pregnancy if they don't take these injections, and that there's financial obligation to this. And these are big, scary words, but we need to understand that this isn't just, oh, I want to be a surrogate today, and that it's 18 months of commitment. So all those timelines we just talked about, plus then 9 months of pregnancy.
So do you find, because if I was sitting on the other side of the table, I would be like, that scares me. I'm like, literally, I'd be like, and would maybe run away. Do you find that a lot of surrogates at that point, this is too big a commitment for me?
Not so much. I think it's pretty well known, especially like in California where we're based out of. Yeah, I think some girls will be like, whew, that's a lot. And then they'll come back, they'll digest. Obviously, we went over a ton of information right now, but we do it in stages. We go over things slightly, little bit by little bit. All what we talked about is a little bit talked about. The next phone call, we talk about this. And then the next call, we talk about this. And then, so at each stage, we talk about, I break up everything little chunks at a time, but...
You give them confidence that you're looking after them. All of that, if I was sitting across from you as a surrogate, I would be scared. Mm-hmm. That's like a lot of jargon and injections. And how do you get over that?
So with my program, you stay with me from start to finish. So you're not passed from one case manager from start. So we bond in the beginning, and that's important. And so that when I explain the steps, so it's this jargon and all these new terminology and it's all these new words and this big process, it's important to me that the girls feel connected and that they know they can literally talk to me about anything. And I tell them that it's never too much information. I've literally heard it all. And if I have it, I will find the answer or we'll figure out, right? Yeah. So then they feel comfortable. And then that's the only way that I can help them. I tell them, the silliest question that you are going to say to me is if you don't ask me, because I can't fix it if I don't know about it.
No question is a silly question.
Correct. The only one is that you didn't ask me, right? It's very important to me that this is big and it's scary, but I need them to feel comfortable and I want them to feel comfortable.
I think anybody who wants to be a surrogate is an amazing human being. And just that level of altruism is stratospheric, right? Mm-hmm. And that was something that you did, mm-hmm. right, at the beginning of almost your career.
I know, I forget.
But how does that affect the relationship that you have with the surrogates?
I think it just gives a level of understanding. And I ultimately, it's just the mother in me. And it's just a different understanding, of course. And it's just my personality, and I just mother everybody and guide them, and just they're my girls.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about you is the passion. And ever since I've known you, which has been about 7 or 8 years now, the passion about what you're doing just shines through, right? I think that's why we've connected. When you're with your girls, as you call them, and I almost get like the mama bear feel from you, which I love. Explain to me how it would be, there are challenges, right? It's not always, as from firsthand experience, it's not always plain sailing. How does that work?
Yes, it can be hard. Like, obviously, every pregnancy doesn't go as planned, or there's complications or extra testing that we need to do. And I have to guide the girls through it, especially if they haven't experienced that in their own pregnancies. And especially if they're not local, I have a lot of girls in the program that aren't specifically in San Diego where I'm located, and it's done remotely, but they have to trust me. They know I'm going to guide them. And so we work on appointments and where we need to go and what specialists we need to see, things like that. And then the emotional side, right? I know it's hard. I know this is rough. I know this extra testing is hard. And this is where it's like, babe, I know this is hard. I know this sucks. I know this is difficult. And if we have to have a cry session, let's cry. I'm a crier. Let's cry it out. Like, extra hugs, extra love, like all these things. And that's where that comes in. Extra phone calls. If we got to cry it out, let's cry it out.
Yeah.
And on both sides, for the intended parent too.
Right. It's almost like you've got their back.
100%. But I have to have everybody's back. I'm the middleman. So I have to keep the intended parent trusting their surrogate, the surrogate not resentful to the intended parent for wanting an example of complications, let's say, of potentially extra testing. But that's what I'm there for. So that relationship can stay fluid. They're not talking about anything businessy. It's just the pregnancy, the friendship. But that's what I'm for. So if, let's say, if it was when you had a surrogate, if you were like, I'm worried she's not eating right, or I want to buy her soaps, great, I'll take care of that. And I'm going to be like, hey, girlfriend, let's work on some organic soaps. I'm not going to say Richard wants you to have soaps. So then it's not you nitpicking what soap she's using at home as an example. I'm going to say it. And then vice versa. If you were being neurotic and calling her 4 times a day.
Yeah, I did that.
Okay, good. So then I would talk to your surrogate and be like, let's schedule Fridays to be your call to talk to the guys. And then let's schedule it. So it's a scheduled time. So you have a little space, and then you could have backed off, right? So yeah. Then that would have, and then everybody would have calmed down. She's not resentful. You would have chilled, and then everybody's happy.
But I did. I was like, are you eating organic? Can I buy you a gym membership? And my surrogate was like, I go to the gym and I eat organic, because that's her life, right?
But that's
right?
Why you picked her, right?
But that's why we picked her. And she had her own children. She'd been pregnant before. This was, as I always say, my first pregnancy, even though we know I wasn't pregnant. To me, it feels like you really are connecting with the surrogate and the intended parent and managing that process.
I don't want to put a match together where it's going to fall apart, because then everybody's going to be miserable. And so I have to do it that way. I don't want a surrogate to be miserable. I don't want an intended parent to be miserable. And yeah, ultimately the baby will still be here, hopefully, but we don't want it to be trauma filled. And then this poor surrogate to be like, God, I did the surrogacy, but, and so I found through the years that this is the way I can do it. And if I have to be the one to make the call and be like, let's try it this way, then that's fine. Or like an example that comes to mind, like a surrogate wanted to go to the chiropractor, but her intended mom didn't want her to go to the chiropractor. So I called and said, oh, girlfriend, my mistake. You can't go to the chiropractor but instead of saying your intended mom said no.
So you took the blame.
100%. No big deal. Like, cool. And then I told the intended mom, I'll take care of it. No problem. It was done in 10 minutes. It's not a problem. Yeah. I have no issue in that.
And I think a testament to that is going back to what you said before, which is you have a lot of surrogates that come back and they recommend you to their friends. And I think that level of confidence in you and your team is huge, because I remember being thousands of miles away.
It's massive.
And thinking, I'm putting my entire trust in somebody. And
it's an emotional trust. It's a massive financial trust. And you looked at a paper profile, you talked to her for 20 minutes in a call before, and then you said, cool, let's get pregnant. It's massive. And you talked to your agency, maybe a few times before you signed a retainer? It's massive. It's a huge amount of trust. And it's gut, right? So when I do consultations with intended parents, that's what I tell them. trust your agency above all, right? Because you're with your agency the longest, and go with your gut. When you meet people, if you feel good about it, and just that's what you need to know, because they're going to be taking care of your surrogate and you the longest.
I just come back to that. The confidence that your surrogates have in you and the process and the way they're dealing with you, that's amazing. But how do you deal with any challenges that their families may face or they face socially and, you know, just in their day-to-day life?
So this is something we talk about. So we do a monthly support group. I do one in person for the San Diego girls locally, just because obviously I can see them in person. And then I also do an online version on the same day. So I guide the girls, not what I do, on how to present their surrogacy to the world and how to answer that. And they can choose. Some days you have it in you to answer and explain your surrogacy. And some days you just say, yes, I'm expecting, and that's it. It's generational. It's religion-based. Sometimes people aren't going to be okay if you're caring for a single male, same-sex couple. So you choose how you want to present it. And a lot of people aren't okay with that you're being compensated for it. And I tell the girls, say, I wanted to help this family, whatever that nuclear of that family look like. Girls choose who they want to help. They can tell me I want to help a same-sex couple or I don't. That's their choice. And then my program, they tell me who they want to choose. They tell me if they want to terminate or not. That's their choice. And then I match them accordingly. So they're not being matched with whoever I tell them to be. So then they can say, I wanted to help a same-sex couple or I only wanted to help a hetero couple. Then they can present to the world or who's asking them or looking down on them negatively on a surrogacy, confident of how they wanted to, why they wanted to help a couple or why they wanted to help a same-sex couple. And then if they want to talk about the compensation, great. And then I tell the girls, it's your choice. My grandpa always told me don't talk about taxes, religion, and money. And so then I tell my girls that too. This is what grandpa said. This is what you can tell people in the world. And then if you want to explain it, get ready for a 30 to 40 minute conversation. Generationally, the older generations find it to be playing God a little bit. IVF is wrong. This is a religion-based thing. It's great. That's your opinion. Great. Again, if it's what you want to explain. And so I just give them a little tidbits on how to approach that. I tell them to explain it to their kids. Kids understand surrogacy. Explain that to them plainly. I explain, put a picture of the intended parents up on the fridge. This is who we're helping. Mommy's helping this family, this single mom, this single dad. And they get it. I don't care how old they are. They understand it. Even littles get it. Then they can explain it at school when mom's not pregnant and a baby's not in a stroller.
Right.
They can explain it to the kids or the teachers.
It's amazing how it's a generational thing, isn't it? How the younger you are, the easier you just, it's more accepting. You take things at face value. There's no overthinking. It is what it is. This is the process and this is what we're doing. And then the older we get, the more.
I think also just because generationally, like our kids, our kids are not taught that way, right? Or if that's your family, it's just the older generations weren't taught to not be as accepting, right?
Tying this back into that first thing where you're sitting down with them and they're making informed choice from the beginning and you're giving them an education. Because I always say that ignorance isn't stupidity. Ignorance is you just don't know.
Of course. How could you possibly know anything about any of this? I can't make anybody be a surrogate.
Yeah, you've really got to want to do it.
Yeah, I don't sign anybody up for this.
Yeah, yeah. Like they're choosing to do this. And I think that gets lost in a lot of the debates.
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to say a huge thank you. I want to say thank you so much for being your first podcast.
I love that.
I know it's amazing. You've been wonderful. And for those of you that are listening and can't see Monica's face, she shines. She radiates. The passion is coming through. And it just...
We're both crying. I'm such a crier.
We're both crying. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to reach out to Monica, we will have your website address in the bottom of our blurb. So thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks.